Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everything I've learned about Stansted so far is like unassuming and very impressive.
Some would describe me that way.
My hometown messed me up. She won't be on a Timmy's cup. I heard about it at the Rotary Club. That's so Canardian. Spill, don't stop.
This is Canardian, the podcast where we gossip about Canadian hometowns. I'm Katie Lohr, freelance podcast producer and author of Pod the North, the Substack newsletter for Canadian podcasters. I am currently joined by Jordan Heath Rawlings, executive producer of the Frequency Podcast Network and host of The Big Story and his new podcast called In This Economy. Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This is exciting. Nobody wants to talk to me about small towns.
I am so excited to talk to you. Okay, so you have actually had a number of hometowns in your lifetime, but you specifically challenged me when I emailed you to check out Stansted, Quebec. So yes. Why is Stansted so significant to you?
I was not born in Stansted. I was born in Montreal, and I've lived most of my life in and around Toronto in about 12 different neighborhoods. We moved a lot growing up, but Stansted is my family's home on my mom's side going back about 225 years.
Wow.
So yeah, they came up about 225 years ago as loyalists and settled in the Eastern Townships and started a farm, including an apple orchard. And the farm remains in the family as an ongoing business concern to this day. It's been run by many branches of the family, currently run by my parents. It's the Verger Heath Orchard, if you are ever in the neighborhood and want some really good apples and pottery.
Wow. Okay, this is so cool. The reason why I'm so excited about doing this show, too, is because I find colonialism so interesting. Like hearing about all like the little first villages happening around the whole country is so deeply fascinating to me. And then, of course, all of the crazy like family gossip that comes out of it. But okay, so then how would you describe Stansted in 5 words or less?
A picturesque hamlet in decline.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm going to put on my tourism hat for a sec and tell you all the titillating details about your hometown that I was able to find, just like to give a baseline ground level view of what this town is all about.
Did you look up the attractions on TripAdvisor?
I didn't.
Oh. Okay, the Verger Heath Orchard is the number one attraction on TripAdvisor. So just okay when you look that up. That's us.
I can't believe I missed that. So insert corporate music cue here. Stansted, Quebec, a tiny little town of just under 3,000 people that sits at the Canadian-United States border across from Derby Line, Vermont. It's a place best known as the Granite Capital, its heritage as the first Canadian stop on the stagecoach route that ran from Boston to Quebec City, and it's the birthplace of the first automobile ever built in Canada. And even with all of those accolades, it is home to only 7 restaurants, including a Tim Hortons and a Subway. And the Stansted Buy and Sell Facebook group has almost 5,000 members of it, which is almost double the actual population of the town.
Right.
And because it's the center of the universe, Stansted is about a 7.5-hour drive from Toronto.
You can make it in 7 if you know what you're doing.
So how does all of that make you feel, Jordan?
It all feels accurate. It's very recently that we got the Tim Hortons in the Subway. That's probably less than a decade ago now.
Well, my question for you is, like, given that, you know, it's got a very tiny population and you were there as a child, what the heck did you possibly get up to as a kid?
Well, we lived on a farm. So I didn't go to school in Stansted. We would spend every summer there, about 3 months a year, and then sometimes in the winter, too. So you're on the farm in the summer. We had a large family on my mom's side, and all her brothers and sisters had kids. So there was a whole bunch of our cousins, and we got up to, like, whatever you imagine kids in a novel set on a farm getting up to all day. We chased each other through the woods. We threw shit at each other.
Children sitting on hay bales for
we
some
sat
reason.
On hay bales. Well, actually, you can jump from hay bale to hay bale, which is a good way to pass some time.
Yeah, and break a leg, but still.
Rub some dirt on it. We weeded the garden for my grandfather for what I believe was the price of 25 cents a row in mid to late August. Another nearby town, Ayerscliff, also a nice little place, would have the annual fair, and they would come to town with rides and a midway and all this stuff. So it was really actually a pretty great place to spend summers as a child with lots of other kids, except you would, the second school let out, you would literally be thrown in the car and taken away from all your friends, and you wouldn't see them again until literally the first day of school.
Were you ever there as a teenager as well, or was it mostly in your early childhood?
I was there. I was there as a teenager spending summers on the farm, which was much tougher than when you're a kid.
Okay. I have a lot of questions about your teenagehood in Stansted when it comes to the U.S. border, only because my dad also grew up on a border town in Sarnia, and he would travel over the bridge in his teenhood and early 20s and, like, go party in the U.S. and stuff. And I'm like, that must have been so easy for you. But I'll get into why, because we haven't explained this just yet. So first, I just want to acknowledge that there's no way that we're going to get to all the interesting pieces about Stansted, because when you told me that you were giving me, like, a hard place to cover, I thought it was going to be because there's, like, nothing interesting about it. But no, the hard part was narrowing it all down to, like, what I wanted to talk about.
It's a weird little place.
This town. It is a weird little place. So it's got its stagecoach history that I mentioned, but I'm not really going to get into that. It's got a lot of heritage buildings and Victorian architecture still. It's kind of got this weird geography on the border that I definitely want to talk to you about. It's got a bunch of, like, community art projects going on there, including its own little Stonehenge called the Stone Circle. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bunch of folklore just around its establishment, and, like, you probably know a ton of it, considering your family has been there forever. And all of this stuff you can really just catch by, like, walking and biking around town, because Stansted is basically just a very interesting intersection. So I've brought up a couple of things that I want to bring up, but is there anything off the bat that brings up thoughts for you?
The Tomophobia River is pretty wild when it rains. It's one of those rivers that's mostly rocks. So when it gets really, really high and rainy, it's like, it looks like one of those things that you would fall in and just be dead.
Oh, well, that sounds like a joy. Like, are there any fun stories from the Tomophobia River? Because I did not look into the river.
Yeah, people have fallen in there for sure and been badly hurt. And for a long time, the local newspaper would report on those. You know, it's a really small town, so you have this little newspaper, and they report on small town things.
And they have a newsletter now. Actually, the minutes and, like, all of the town council agendas are very accessible online on their website. Like, they have everything that you can read about the town that's, like, going on at this exact very moment.
That's interesting. I've never done that. They probably do that because there's no newspaper anymore. The Stansted Journal was, until its end in, I believe, 2019, the longest-running weekly English newspaper in Canada since its inception. It ran from the inception of Canada, basically, until 2019.
This is unsurprising to me. Everything I've learned about Stansted so far is like unassuming and very impressive. Like, what is this place?
Someone described me that way.
Okay, so the Stansted geography, like...
Yeah, it's an intersection, basically. Maybe two.
It's an intersection. I've mentioned it's on the border. So basically, the whole township kind of looks like a short top hat, which the brim is the Canadian-US border. And there are actually three border crossings from Stansted. So there's one on the highway, one downtown, and one in Beebe, which is like used to be a little village, but now it's part of the whole town. And the border is pretty significant because what makes Stansted Stansted is that people in the town often have family on both sides. They work and live on both sides. In one video that I saw, the border downtown just is like a painted line across the road. And it says Canada and United States of America painted on either side.
Do you know what the road is called? It's called Canusa. Think about it.
Oh, it's just Can and USA. Mm,
yes.
Stansted, so much personality you have. What a little town. So on Canusa Street, on Can USA Street, some of the houses have their houses in Vermont and their driveways are in Quebec.
Yep.
But there's no noticeable boundary. In other spots in town, the border goes directly through people's houses. So like you'll be making dinner in America and eating it in Canada.
Yep.
So what is like your experience with the border? Do you have any funny border stories?
Well, the thing is, and I'm sure it's a little bit different now, though probably not much. When you say like the border is significant in people's lives, it's not, which is the really like fun thing because you live with it, right? And nobody asks you to go and check in at the border before you walk across the street to your friend's house or et cetera, et cetera. And definitely the border got a lot tighter after 9/11, but it's very much like when you say it plays a daily role in people's lives, like it doesn't really. I don't think the people there consider it much. Like, it's definitely interesting to be able to cross the border to buy cheaper gas. Or, I mean, we get a ton of people coming up from Vermont to buy apples at the farm and stuff. So there's definitely a lot of cross-border traffic. But for the people in Stansted, like, it doesn't really affect your life that much.
So I'm going to get into this, but apparently the biggest problem about the border there is journalists and tourism. But first, I want to talk about probably like one of the most notable places in town that the border runs through, which is the Haskell Library and Opera House.
Mm-hmm. Number two on the TripAdvisor list behind the Verger Heath Orchard.
Jordan, do you have any memories of going to the library?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably the main place in town that I have memories of, aside from the diner, which is still there and serves string fries that wind in crazy little tangles. And they come in gigantic portions, and they're called curly cues. And they are fucking amazing. Can I say that on your show? They're amazing.
Yeah.
They're fucking amazing. Steve's. I can't believe I forgot that. There's another one in the next town over called Woods's, and I was getting them confused. I was like, I want to say Woods's, but it's not that. That's the one with ice cream. This is how we differ one diner from the other in the Eastern Townships. Pizzeria Steve, the curly cues. Amazing. Anyway.
Okay.
But yes, besides Pizzeria Steve, the library is like the place, especially when you're a kid, especially pre-internet when you were reading books all summer and occasionally taking out a VHS tape from the library, of which they had a pretty decent collection, as I recall, including like lots of British stuff, lots of BBC stuff. So like Monty Python and stuff like that. The library is really cool. It's a beautiful building.
So here's a little bit of history about it.
Yeah.
It was erected in 1907 by Martha Stewart Haskell, not the Martha Stewart that we all know. And it was a tribute to her husband. She purposely built it right on the border. And it was supposed to be shared between the Canadian, between Canadians and Americans. And like downtown, basically, on Canusa Street, there is a border painted directly on the floor all the way through the building. Mm-hmm. And at first, the building was just a small library, but then Martha decided to add the opera house to it. And there, the stage is in Canada, and most of the audience is in America. Jordan, how did that even work, going to the library? Like, was Border Patrol checking passports at the door or something?
No.
Like, or just people don't care?
Nobody. You just, again, it's a little... people on both sides of the border are free and welcome to use the library because it is half on each side. If you want to do other stuff in town that is wholly on one side or the other, then and you're coming from the other side, then you have to go over to the border and check in and go through. But if you're only like using the library or taking a walk on the grass or going to look at the Tomophobia River or whatever, no, you don't have to. You don't have to check in. I think it varies, and this is where I want to be a little bit clear here because we're going to talk about, I think, later some of the particulars about the border around here. Nobody cares if I do it because I am a white dude whose family has lived in the area for 225 years and I can tell the guys at the border, like, yo, stop by, we'll give you some apples, which I have done when we accidentally ran the border the first time I took my girlfriend out, now wife, out to Stansted. And we went down a different street, which meant we had to come back by past the border, even though we'd never gone in. And I was like, well, we never checked in. We just went to the library. I just wanted to show her the library, so we don't have to check in. So we just drove by the border because I'm an idiot. And then the alarms start going off and the cops run out of the border station. And this is the border coming back from America into Canada because I'd accidentally crossed into America. So thankfully it was Canadian folks who... And I was literally able to say, like, well, you know, my girlfriend's not from around here. She's driving. She doesn't understand. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings from the Heath Orchard just up the road, et cetera, et cetera. And it was okay. But they're like, we could have fined you and taken you to jail. You just ran the border.
Well, how are you to know if you're running the border or not at that point when it's so accessible?
Yeah, I didn't think we were. But if you drive one street further, you're then officially in America. And the only way to get back to Canada is to drive past the border. And I didn't think we needed to stop at the border because we'd never crossed.
And you never got arrested.
No, never got arrested.
So in 2012, the RCMP and the U.S. Border Patrol did get really anxious about illegal immigration, specifically around Romani refugees. And so the RCMP installed flower pots across the road to deter people from crossing into the border.
Yeah, I guess. That sounds right. That's probably exactly where we drove past.
Yep. So there's like a whole little row of flower pots that span across the road. And fun fact, there is a type of flower, a type of daylily called Canadian Border Patrol.
No, really?
Whether or not. Yeah. And whether or not those are the flowers in the flower pots, I don't know for sure. But this is just a random fun fact I found.
Well, that's interesting. I do know there were worries. It was almost Wroxham Road before Wroxham Road. So I do remember the local speculation around that.
Okay, it's time for me to interrupt this episode to tell you about another podcast that you should 100% be listening to. You probably recognize Rick Harp from episode 2, and he is the host and creator of a podcast called Media Indigena. Media Indigena is one of my favorite podcasts to listen to catch up on all things Indigenous news and just general news through an Indigenous lens. I think that's super important considering we are living in Canada, we are all on stolen land, we should be knowing these things. Media Indigena is an Indigenous-led roundtable podcast that's been connecting the dots of colonialism since 2016. It's intelligent and irreverent, and it's a consistent source of timely takes on current events and issues that matter most to Indigenous peoples, ranging from pretendians to the rot of reconciliation and way more. There was one really, really interesting episode that I loved in particular about white Canadian vacationers taking up Indigenous land in Mexico with their vacation homes. It was super interesting. I highly recommend checking out this podcast. You can learn more about this podcast at mediaindigena.com, and I will have the link to that in the show notes.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Okay, back to the episode. Okay, so on the topic of the library, there is a rumor about it that you may or may not have heard, that in the 1970s, John Lennon and Paul McCartney of the Beatles were in trouble with the authorities based off of some drug issues. So John didn't want to leave the US and Paul wasn't allowed to enter. So they secretly met at the library so they can move freely between Stansted and Vermont. And apparently these meetings in the library, they were discussing things like their reunion tour. But a lot of folks also say that this story doesn't really have any basis. However, it did inspire a local playwright named Ross Murray to write a play called All Together Now in 2019. So have you heard the story?
I've heard the story. I don't believe it at all.
You don't believe it? So does that mean you've talked to all 2,000 people in this in the town and they've all vouched for it, basically?
No, but like we know enough of the people around that area that like we would have heard from someone who actually knew something about it. And like, I just can't imagine. And Stansted is a very small town. It would be extremely difficult to sneak a beetle or two in and out and not have somebody see it and talk about it and write it up in the Stansted Journal. Like, again, the newspapers offices would have been a block and a half away from the library. If they wanted to get anything to eat, there are only five places they can get it. You know, if they wanted to stay a night and come back and talk again in the morning, there are two places they can stay. So, no, we would have heard about that if it was true. I definitely heard the rumor. And the play is real.
When did you hear the rumor at first?
I think probably around the time the play came out, to be honest with you.
Okay, well then, on that note, the playwright, Ross Murray, he's actually an author and an award-winning columnist, among other things. He's written a lot of books and some stuff for CBC, and he also writes a blog called Drinking Tips for Teens. So I emailed him and I was like, you guys seem like you're around the same age. You're both in similar industries. Like, do you know each other? So are you familiar with a Ross Murray at all?
So I don't think so. But I think the thing is that so much of the time that I spent most there was my childhood. So I'm sure I would have just been like Ross from camp or whatever.
True.
Ross, I assume, didn't remember me.
Ross did not remember you. I emailed him and he said, thanks for the compliment. I'm pretty sure I'm at least a decade and a half older, which I don't think he's very old, to be honest. He doesn't. I think he's just saying that because he's a comedian and they like to, you know, just be self-deprecating. But okay. So Ross wrote this piece on his blog called The Border Story, in which he said, quote, this border community has become overrun by a pernicious yet mostly polite presence, journalists. They write stories about the border, and increasingly there are reporters writing stories about the border. And now look at us. We are podcasters talking about reporters writing stories about reporters writing stories about the border. He then went on to say, for years, reporters traveled to the border community, remarked upon the flower pots at the border, interviewed five people, the same five people. So, Jordan, why do you think so many journalists come to Stansted?
Oh, I know the exact reason and exactly when and why it happened.
Okay,
this was going to be my thing that I was going to tell you later, but you want me to just tell you now?
Okay.
It started in 2016 with Donald Trump. What happened is, as you probably remember, Donald Trump became president and very shortly thereafter came a Muslim ban. And what happens is a lot of international students in the U.S. are of Muslim heritage. And their parents were no longer able to come and visit them, come and see them. They could not talk to family. because they could not leave the U.S. without not being able to get back in. And their family could not get into the U.S. to come and see them. So what they would do, especially ones in New York or Boston, anywhere on the sort of northeast seaboard, is they would drive up to Stansted and visit the library. And they would sit down and their parents would fly to Montreal and rent a car. It's not a far drive from Montreal. And you drive down about an hour and a half and you visit the library. And look at that. Nobody crossed the border, but you're here at the same time and you're in a pleasant building and you can sit for quite some time and talk and catch up and hug and all of that stuff. And that is where the phenomenon came from. And then word of that, and I'm partially responsible for this because I tipped off Maclean's, word of that spread through Canadian journalism and people were looking for heartwarming stories at the time. That's what started the real influx. The border's always been a curiosity. The library's always been a curiosity, but that was the thing that added the real, like, heartbreaking news hook, et cetera, to, that's what brought in all the journalists.
Ross's blog also had this quote in it that said, we've had a lot of reporters visit here over the years, right after 9/11, like you mentioned, when Trump was running for president, like you mentioned, stories about which was worse, 9/11 or Trump being president. And then sometimes reporters just came by because they saw a story about the Stansted Derby line crossing and thought it would just be neat to do an almost identical story of their own.
Yes.
But he also had this one quote that I need to get your reaction to. 0% of reporters are from here.
0.0001%.
Well, I was going to say a large part of your career has been spent as a columnist and a managing editor, and I'd almost go so far to say that you are a reporter from Stansted. So what do you say to this?
I'd say that there's a very good chance I'm the only one left now that the journal is gone. I've never actually reported on Stansted for anything. I did as an editor, as a somebody who was working with magazines. I definitely did during the Trump years say, you know, there's a neat story out there if you want to do it whenever the subject came up. I don't think I've ever reported on the Eastern Townships, save for references to it in, you know, columns or long pieces that have some sort of personal element. So a reporter from Stansted, maybe. A reporter on Stansted, no.
From what I've gathered from this statement is that there are neither. And I have concluded there's at least one.
Fair enough. Like I said, 0.001%.
Yeah. That's the better way to put it. You mentioned the word Eastern Township really quickly. This is something that I found in my research and was like, this is probably something I should know about. But this is actually the first I've ever heard of Eastern Townships. What do you know about what the heck the Eastern Townships are?
Townships largely settled from loyalists coming up from the United States and Quebecers moving down from Quebec City and expanding westward. For a long time, farming country, agriculture country, and still, I mean, still probably a big producer of vegetables and fruits and great apples.
Tell me more about the apples, Jordan.
I will if you want. There's like 35 varieties. We got everything. And my mom makes handmade pottery. And we get local honey and the good Quebec maple syrup. None of that Ontario trash. Anyway, what's happened to them recently as economic prospects have declined and the next generation doesn't want to stick around and be a farmer, which is something that all sorts of farming communities are dealing with, is that they are increasingly becoming, and they're not there yet, so I won't say it like that, but Montreal's version of Muskoka, where the more well-to-do Montrealers will buy a lovely lakefront vacation property off in the Eastern Townships and make it all nice for themselves and the villages around there. Not quite Stansted because it's not near any lakes really, but places like Ayers Cliff, which I mentioned, will change to accommodate that. So you'll see a lot more artisan stuff, like really nice expensive cheeses and butchers and art galleries and stuff like that. And you know, the properties go up in value and locals see even less need to want to afford them. And it sort of transforms from, like I said, a very agriculture-based community to a more tourism-based one. It's still a ways away from being like pure Muskoka, but that's the direction it's going.
So, Jordan, you've brought a juicy story to tell me about your hometown, but I don't know if it's real, if it's folklore, or something that you've totally made up. I'm just going to guess that at the end, but please go ahead, spill all of your hometown tea, please.
Well, there are a lot of stories about the library and what you can and can't do when you can find a way to go across the border without going across the border.
Okay.
And you should understand that the library is, like, it is a large place. I've seen, if you see pictures, or maybe you'll put a link to some pictures in the show notes, but, like, the inside of the library, it's a gigantic manor house, basically, with an opera house off to the side of it. But the key thing to know about that is there's a number of rooms. Like, it's not, you think of a library in Toronto or wherever being this big kind of industrial space, right, with rows and rows of books and stuff like that. This is not that. I mean, there are big rooms that have lots of books in them, but there are also small rooms where you can sit and work at a table, or there are rooms upstairs that, you know, I assume that they have microfiche up there and that kind of stuff, right? But
yeah.
But there are probably well over a dozen rooms, and some of them are like meeting rooms that you can book, right? Like you would at a library in Toronto. I don't know if many libraries in Toronto have meeting rooms. The reference library does, though, right? Like you just say, you know, I need a space to work. I'm doing some research. Can I book this room for like 2 hours? So with that, obviously, comes the ability to for two people to come from opposite sides of the border and meet in a room that somebody's booked for a couple hours. And in some cases, perhaps exchange, well, marijuana would be...
I wasn't thinking about that at all.
Well, there's two aspects to it. The first is you thought I was going to say bodily fluids. That comes later.
Yeah.
The first is, like, you know, it's an easy way to get drugs across the border without having to actually, you know, stare down a cop with the drugs in your car somewhere.
And there's no border patrol at the library entrance, so you're good.
No, there's, I mean, you know, the librarians will keep an eye out, but it's a fucking small town. Nobody, you know. And again, we're not talking like massive. It would be very difficult to conceal massive amounts of drugs or anything. Like it's a library, you know. But if you want to pick up something from across the road, then you just meet at the library and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, especially during the Trump years, you did have, in some cases, married couples who were caught on opposite sides of the border and hadn't seen each other in quite some time. You know, the rooms are fairly closed in. And my understanding is that, you know, librarians are just like, as long as it's quiet, you're researching. who are we to say what, you know?
As long as people there can read in peace.
And
still,
I think that they
that
understood. I think that they understood that, like, they know what was going on, like what the library was there for. And I'm not just talking about funny business here, but like they understood the importance of their library to people who were separated from their families. And I think that extended all the way to a little bit of privacy in a room. And again, it's one of those things that if you're in a small town, you know, kind of know, like, people will allow it as long as you don't get out of line. Don't do anything stupid. Don't call attention to yourself. Don't make it a big thing. Don't invite three people and have a party, you know. Just, we've given you privacy. You've got this time. Go do your research.
You kind of have to, if you're in that position, you have to realize that, like, your business is everybody's business, and that's, like, just a matter of fact. And the business that you give those people has to be pretty tame or just realistic, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like you said, don't abuse the hospitality, I think, is the best way to put it. And live and let live and let whatever else.
Live and let book a library
live and,
room.
Live and let, you know. but yeah, this, I mean, that's the library. It's the Haskell Free Library.
Well, that sounds all truthful to me. So I'm assuming I'm correct, right?
No, the drugs are true. The sex I made up.
What? No, I bet you. I think the sex is folklore at this point. I think
no,
it's
you can't. You
true.
Can't really do it. It'd be too awkward.
Are there too many windows, or are the floors
just
too creaky?
It's not quite. I mean, it's an old creaky house. There's not a lot of privacy. It's like there's rooms, but you wouldn't really be able to do it. The drugs thing, though, definitely.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Have you watched the show Sex Education?
No.
So the show Sex Education follows a teenager who basically takes after his mom, who's a sex therapist, and starts doling out sex advice to his teenage fellow students, and he ends up booking meeting rooms and people come and get his advice. And I was thinking, I wouldn't be surprised if some teenager just booked the library room to start doling out weed to his fellow teen friends.
I mean,
and just having a place to do it.
There's not a lot of other places in town, although there really is an awful lot of open space. So you don't
There's only one intersection, so everybody's going to see you.
Yes.
So you can't just do it on the street. You got to book the library meeting room.
I got a lot of research to do.
Jordan, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Where can people find you?
In Stansted, Quebec, in the summertime. No. People can find all of our podcasts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. But if you just want to listen to the ones I host, they are The Big Story, and they are In This Economy, and they are wherever you get your podcasts. And if you ever do head out to the Eastern Townships, Verger Heath Orchard, it's got everything you need. I told my parents I was doing this, and they're like, you better plug the orchard, kid. So I've done it like four times now, so they're going to hear this, and they're going to be super happy. They won't be happy that I told the stories about the border, but that's okay. As long as we plug the orchard, they don't really care about anything else.
Jordan Heath Rawlings doing it for his parents. And the website for the Apple Orchard will be in the show notes if that exists. If not, it'll be the Google Maps link.
It exists. So
it's there. Okay, great. I'm Katie Lohr. You can find me through all the links in the show notes as well. And you can subscribe to my Substack newsletter, Pod the North at podthenorth.com. The Canardian theme song is by my very talented partner, Mark Allen, with support from his own hometown buddies, Ben Cousins, Brad Cousins, Jordan White, Shane Fester, and me. And if you like the podcast or you know someone from Stansted, Quebec, please share it with a friend or in your Instagram story. I'll see you around town.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.